I'll be able to get the mic on now. I figured I'd strangle myself while I was on the way up with the mic. But I didn't. I made it all right. So we're well off on our way. If you're visiting with us, I'm glad you're here. It's always good to see those that are visiting with us. We're always delighted. And if you would, please stick around so we can get to know you. I want to get to the lesson rather quick tonight because we're going to cover about somewhere around 4,000 years tonight. I know what you're thinking. We'll never go home. Well, we'll miss some details, but we'll cover what we can. I preached this lesson before, and I had been asked a couple, three times or so, and particularly 11-year-old boy had asked me once before to do it again because he'd never heard it. Well, I said, well, I'll give it my best shot, but I want to do it again. And I think it's always good that we go over it again. It's enlightening to go over it again, especially when you study it, because I will get more out of it than I'm sure you will. Because I always find something new that I thought I knew that I didn't. And it's always just revealing to go over and study it. But people, when they study the Bible, say that it's just too hard to understand. We can't understand it. That's what they'll say. And when you grow up young, you'll study sometimes sporadically. Like in my case, when I was growing up, it wasn't any fault or a person that just had that method of wanting to teach that way. It's just, that's the way it was. I think most of us can relate to that. We would study the book of Acts. I always make this comment because we studied Acts a lot. We studied the book of Acts, and Acts is important. And then we go back and study the book of Genesis. Then we'll study Acts. We might study Luke next. We might even go to Romans, both those books, Book of Romans. We got 1st, 2nd Peter. And then we might occasionally hit Revelation for about two or three chapters. And we're like, well, let's go back to Acts. It's around 12 and 13 up, you know. So all those years went by. I could not put the entire Bible story together at all as a picture, as a whole. And because of that, you never gain a complete picture. It's always, you memorize the books of the Bible when you're young. It's great. You know the judges maybe. You may know even the kings. Most kids nowadays can, at one time I did too, but I forgot most of them. But you can know the kings and you can know all the books, but you never really know the Bible story. Some folks are more, not so much in love. People are not in love with the Bible anymore. They're in love with the idea of being religious. And I see that so much when we talk about the scriptures in the Bible. Most cannot say the books of the Bible. I read a stat today. I knew it was bad, and I read these stats. I like to look at stats, but I read this one in particular. It was rather shocking. It said that 60% of the professing Christians knew the Bible story, only 60% of professing, which is probably, you can whittle it down around 10, 15, 20%, 30. It's much lower than that. And out of that, the ones that are scholars don't really know it either because they haven't spent much time in the Bible itself. Read a lot of books about the Bible. We do that sometimes, commentary and so forth. And they got so much hung up in that. Now, we can't treat the Bible as a piece of furniture that's real nice on a coffee table. We've done that sometimes. We had one too growing up. Big black Bible. It looked great. Love the pictures in it too, by the way. And I love the Bible, but I remember thinking, well, there's a lot of stuff in this book here. It's a big, thick one, you know. Well, we can't do the Bible like that. There's a lot of stuff in there. Now, if we look at the Bible and say, well, it's just too hard to understand. If you just read, and that's as far as it goes, it's going to be very difficult. It's not really the book necessarily. I think it may be my approach to studying it. So I hope to make an interesting, I guess, study tonight with you, just what I can do with telling the Bible story from beginning to end. Now, that's, you know, saying a lot, Because with God, there is no beginning or end, is it? But we'll go right into it. We know, in the beginning. All right. Most kids can quote this, go right through it. In the beginning. This is all, if you have to take the Bible and bust it up into pieces, this is my method of doing it. You may have another method, that's fine. I use 17 periods, or you can use 17 folders. 17, make up anything you want to do and put them in sections. That way, it's a lot easier, especially if you're teaching children, it's a lot easier to break it up like that. So in this folder here, we're going to call before the flood. Everything that happens before the flood happened is going to be in this folder, before the building of Noah's Ark and all that's leading up to this era right here. And after the flood is different things. But before the flood, in the beginning, God created the heaven, the earth, creation. God spoke everything into existence. 6 days, rested on the seventh day. Of course, we don't know dates at this time. Now, scientists try to put dates on them, but we really don't know. I think the dates they come up with is incorrect, to be honest with you. Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden. We know about that. Adam was made. Eve was made for Adam. We know about their first sin. You may eat of every tree in the garden except for one tree, and that was the tree of knowledge of good and evil. But they did eat that tree. Thus, they were cast out of the Garden of Eden, and they no longer had access to the tree of life. Man is now going to die. That's just God's, that was what God said. They had all the trees to eat of, but that one tree, and they ate of that tree. And you know that story fairly well. Well, they leave the Garden of Eden. Of course, they had other sons and daughters. They had Cain and Abel and Seth and other sons and daughters besides those that are actually mentioned, a few. So time went on, and we know the story about Cain and Abel. Cain kills Abel, right? And the angels set before the gardens. They're not going to go back in the garden. The Garden of Eden's gone, and I don't think they're ever going to find the Garden of Eden. Man grows wicked over time. Now, a lot of stories transpired right there. Man grows wicked over time. Several years go by. Man grows wicked over time. In fact, it said that man grew so wicked, we're going to have a flood. Before I get to the flood, though, man grew so wicked that the thoughts, and this is what we talked about in class, the thoughts on man's heart was on evil continually. Now, we've all had some bad thoughts, evil thoughts. I mean, sugarcoat it how I want to. It's evil thoughts. We've all had them here and there. All sin, fall short. But on evil continually, I think, is a whole different realm. But man was on evil continually. We know that there was, even in those days, before we get to places like Sodom and Gomorrah and other places, there was men with men and women with women and all kinds of sin going on. Man was just doing what he wanted to do. Did not care about God at all. He forgot God. And getting back to the scholar thing, I think so many study, our problem is, so many of us study sometimes, it's information overload. We are accessed to it so much, we forget the book itself. We got on our phone, we got on an iPad, we can access it anywhere, really. Like David talked about the other day, 10, 15 different versions. There are over 1,000 different religions in the United States alone now. Last I heard was 700, now it's 1,000. And some of the same flavors, just name different things. So man grows wicked. Thoughts were on evil continually. God says, I'm going to destroy man. I regret that I even made man. That's pretty. What if you believe in that day and God regrets even making man? But did God make a mistake? No, he didn't make a mistake. God knew everything was going to take place before the foundation of the earth was even created. Ask me to explain that. I can't explain God like that, but he this was his plan. He tells Noah to build an ark. Kids know about the ark. It's about 450 feet long, about 3 stories high, thereabouts, 45 feet, I guess, and what, 75 feet wide, something like that. Not a very float-worthy vessel, but he told him specifically how to build the ark, make it out of gopher wood, make it to these dimensions, and be careful. And he said, take care that you do things according to the things that I have instructed. Now, what if your dad tells you, those that can remember these days, or your mom, and she says, son, I want you to go out there and I want you to get me 5 tomatoes in the garden. You go out there and you get 2 tomatoes. Did you do exactly what she said? Well, no, but you got 2 of them. You did get 2 of them. God decides to destroy man with a flood. The world thought Noah was a fool for building the ark. Took about 100 years to build the ark. And they laughed at Noah. They said, Noah, you're a fool. It's not rain. It's not going to be a flood. And it's going to be a flood. This guy's building his ark. It's going to be a flood. And Noah's preaching and he's warning. Well, Noah's around 600 years old when the flood and all that came. People lived a long time back then. In fact, Adam was 900 and some odd years old. We have, read about Methuselah, 900 and some odd years old. And several other people. And then we see man's lifespan begin to slow down after the flood. They thought Noah was a fool, but only 8 souls were saved. That was Noah, his wife, his sons, and their wives. And that was it. And all, and what animals he took on board, the ones God had instructed, 2 of a male and a female, 7 of the group, and such, the fowl. And sometimes people ask me about fish. Somebody asked about fish. I said, well, it says everything else was destroyed. I'm assuming that fish were destroyed. How that, I don't know. But the good thing is I don't have to know. I know that those were saved. Everything else was destroyed. Just not complicated, no more than that. So they come out of the ark, in the ark about 150 days. Now, it rained 40 days and 40 nights. Some believe that he was in the ark 40 days and 40 nights. No, it rained that long. It did. But floods came up from the deep, and it flooded the entire earth. 15 cubits, I believe it was, above the highest mountain. We don't know really what the highest mountain was at that time, but we know how high the one is now, and that's pretty high. And it was 15 cubits above the highest mountain. That floated the earth as we see it from outer space. We see the blue and the brown. It was all blue, you might say, if we look at outer space at that moment. World's destroyed. And wouldn't you like to be in that? Wouldn't you feel sorry for the soul that was outside the ark when God shut the door of the ark? God, it says God shut the ark, shut Noah up in the ark, depending on what translation you want to read. But God sealed the door. And he wouldn't come out of that door until about a year, and depending on how you want to read it, about a year and 5 or 15 days in that ark. You say, what about all those animals? Again, we're not told. Preparations were made. It's a big ark. But so they come out of the ark after time. Waters had to recede. They come out of the ark. They migrated down. How many, if I asked the kids, you have to raise your hand, but how many would you know where Mount Ararat would be? It's up around the... If you see the land of Canaan, Israel, it's up toward the north, just a little east up in that area. That's where the ark rested in the scriptures. They came down the mountain. They went down to the plain of Shinar, they called it. It's also the Mesopotamian Valley, part of the Fertile Crescent. They went down that area. I just mentioned that. And they wanted to stay there, though. They wanted to stay there and make a big name for themselves. They built a city, and they wanted to build a tower. We're around Genesis 11 now. Genesis 10 was genealogy chapters, which I was going to do, but I said, no, I won't do that. But maybe because I may not remember all of them. But Genesis 11, that's where it talks about the Tower of Babel. Now, Moses is recording the first 5 books of the Bible. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and the speeches he gave in Deuteronomy to Joshua and the people before they go take the land. So God said to go and disperse and multiply, but the people didn't want to go, did they? They wanted to build a tower. So God came down and he smote their language. They said, look, we have bricks. We can burn bricks. We can make mortar. We got slime. We got mortar. And let's build a big tower to reach up into heavens. That wasn't God's plan. So he come down and confused their language. And that word Babel, and Ul, I was trying to read some of it, it was like God's gate or something like that. But the thing is, God came down and smote their language, and the work ceased because they couldn't communicate anymore. It'd be like you talk one language, like, and I completely don't understand, and we're trying to work on a tower. It'd be hard enough just to communicate, open the door. But to build something like a tower or anything else would be very difficult. So he does do that. Confused the language, they scattered on all the face of the earth. Now, so the world we know began over in that area, because back at the creation part, the very first one I read, 4 rivers are named for the kids. The Tigris, Euphrates are 2 of them. They're still there. We're listing them out today. Exactly there, maybe moved a little because of erosion, but there are 2 rivers mentioned, the Gihon and the Pishon, and the other 2. Think they know where they're at, but still haven't really found those 2 rivers. So that's kind of a good area, and it makes sense because Sumer, as you read in school, and Western Civ, and all those, some of your school teachers, Wayne might tell you about it, not everybody. Sumeria, you read about, it was the first civilization. Well, not really. I mean, it was the first, I guess, the world may accept, but it had Ur and Mesopotamia, they had school systems. They had mathematical systems. They had all that stuff. So Sumeria is right in the middle between the two rivers, Tigris and Euphrates. And Ur would be on the banks of pretty much south of the Euphrates area. So it does stand real good evidence that that's where it was at. So moving on here. Time goes on. We come to an area called, we call the patriarchs. We're in our third folder. We had, before the flood, we had the flood, Noah and his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And we have the patriarchs. Now, the patriarchs, we usually refer to as the first three is like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and all those stories that go along with it. Abraham called out of Ur of the Chaldees. His son Isaac, who he was going to offer up, if you remember that story. And then Jacob. Jacob had 12 sons who become the 12 tribes. So his 12 sons are going to inherit the land. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Dan, Naphtali. I know I'm missing two. If I hadn't been up here talking to you, I might have remembered them. But those are 12 sons, and they became the heads of the tribes that were going to the land. Now, by the time they get to the land, though, we'll see back then, this is a little after that, the Deuteronomy, the book of Deuteronomy, those are basically a list of instructions. Moses is going to die. We know that God took care of burying Moses. And Joshua and him are going to take the land. We'll talk about that. So we look at it from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as the patriarchs. We know about the story of Jacob and Esau. He sold his birthright. He gave up the blessing. Jacob had tricked Esau. And so the lineage, it says right here, is through Jacob. We see that back when the sin was committed in the Garden of Eden, we see now God has to redeem man. And that's the Bible story, the redemption of mankind and how he does it. We don't know everything. I think most of this stuff, maybe he's put here just for us to understand. But that's what we got. But he had to redeem mankind, and Genesis 3 tells us how he's going to do that. He's going to have a king, one's coming later. He reiterates those promises to Abraham, he gets to Isaac, to Jacob, to David, so, several times all through history, reiterates those promises, and he fulfilled those promises. And we'll see that just maybe here in just a minute. We talked about the sons of Jacob, the sons of the tribes. As we talk about those sons of Jacob, you got Joseph and Benjamin. There we go. Joseph and Benjamin, Benjamin being the youngest. Now, Joseph was the character, if you remember, the person who had a coat of many colors. That rings a bell to some young kids. That he had made for him by his. And his brothers had sold him into slavery. These, if you want to call them, I guess caravans or gypsies would be passing by. Reuben really didn't want to, but he went along with it anyway, and he was going to go back and get Joseph out of the hole that they put him in. But they sold him into to these caravans and so forth. He winds up down in Egypt, make a long story short. Well, there's a famine later in his land, or his people's land. They make their way down to Egypt. They don't really recognize Joseph at first, do they? So they go down, and he finds out it's them. He recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. Well, we know how that story goes on, that Benjamin, his father, he puts a cup in there, and that story there. And that's all I'll say right there at that point to move on. They wind up being enslaved in Egypt. Egypt was being very blessed. Pharaoh loved having the Israelites at this time now. Israelites, Jacob's name was changed to Israel. But they loved having the people there because they were being blessed, just like the Israelites were, their cattle, their crops. They were receiving the blessing just by having them there. Well, they didn't want to let them go, did they? Come time for them to go. This is about the time that, you know, Moses is recorded that, you know, the burning bush appears to Moses, and I want you to go and get my people out of Egypt. Moses is like, well, who am I to go? And this one we have the stories of Moses and Aaron and those stories. They're enslaved in Egypt now. We call that, a lot of times referred to as the Egyptian bondage. They're enslaved in Egypt. Well, they got to be free. Moses is the guy that's going to do it. He was pretty determined, wasn't he? Well, he pleaded with Pharaoh to let him go, and he wouldn't do it. Finally, he sends 10 plagues to let them go. The first one, all of them were bad. You have to understand, these 10 plagues would be horrible. But when your heart is hardened, it says God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Did he do it where he couldn't? No. I think he let his actions harden his heart. But he wouldn't do it. The 10th plague was the death of the firstborn. And one of them happened to be Pharaoh's son. And at that plague, he decides to let the people go. It took to that point. The frogs, lice, water, blood, flies, murine, all that stuff. He said, okay, I'm going to let you go. Nah, I changed my mind. Because he'd sort of get over that. And we do that sometimes today, don't we? We have something happen to us, and we're like, oh, I need to be, I'm going to go to church. I'm going to pray. I'm going to do so much. I'm going to read scriptures every day. We make all those promises, don't we? And it's about a week, maybe 3 days go by. We're sort of like, but so I'm tired. And, you know, I've got so much to do. And I'm talking to myself. It's just trying to be as plain as I can. Well, to lead them out of Egypt, going out, leaving Egypt, called an exodus. It's not really a biblical word. We use it as the exodus, but you can have an exodus. If we start rushing out of this building, that's the exodus of people leaving the Market Street building, right? There's a lot more people down here. So they leave. They cross the Red Sea. And if you ever, you're old enough that remember the Ten Commandments that came out in the late 60s, early 70s. I love that movie. Yul Brynner was great in that movie. Now, I thought he was the real deal because he was the guy chasing Moses. I remember that just being so vivid. But now it looks kind of, I still like the movie, but there's some inaccuracies in there, but a lot of truth in it, more than it would be in today's movies. But you get Moses and you get Aaron. Aaron was the high priest. Any high priest after that had to be a direct descendant of Aaron. We'll talk about the tribes in just a minute, like Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. That Levi guy, one of his sons, was the only tribe the priest could come from. Priests. High priest would come direct descendant from Aaron. Okay? But Jesus didn't come from Levi, did he? They came from Judah. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Time goes on. They leave Egypt. They go up as far as Kadesh Barnea. Miriam dies at Kadesh Barnea. They send out 12 spies to spy out this land that Abraham earlier went to. And he was already in the land. Just always going to be given to him at that moment. But they go up in the land to encompass the land, to spy out the land, to see what's going on. They come back. 10 says, we cannot take the land. They are huge people. They're giants. They're going to kill us. They bring back a stave, two big poles with big cluster of grapes on it. That's a big cluster of grapes. But Joshua and Caleb said, oh, we can take that land. 2 went. 12 went. 10 said, we can't take the land. 10 said, two said we can. But because of that, they're made to wander in the wilderness. A year, for every day they were gone. So they were gone 40 days to come back. And they wandered 40 years. The clothes didn't wear out. God took care of the food. They didn't raise cattle. They had nothing out there. Manna, quail. And then one time they said, oh, we're sick of quail. Okay. Or we're sick of this manna. He said, all right, well, I'll give you quail then. And he gave them so much, they made them sick. 3 feet deep. And sometimes, in one story, they actually was struck dead with quail still in their teeth. The Bible's very detailed about that. Was God cruel? Absolutely not. Because they had whined and complained, and we might have done the same thing. That's the thing. But, and so many times, and I think about Moses the whole time, leading the people out. And, you know, when you think of Moses, he was a pretty patient guy. He made a misjudgment, and God issued his punishment for that, but was God cruel? No, we know Moses was in the transfiguration. He got the better gift. But they were made to wander in the wilderness. They sent the spies to bring a report. 10 said we can't, 2 said we can. Joshua and Caleb were those two men. And in Deuteronomy, he gives these speeches just before he gets ready to go in and take the land. Joshua is now taken over where Moses leaves off. They go in, they take the land, and as we call this invasion and conquest. The first two cities they talk about is Jericho and Ai. I know we sing the song, and every kid in here knows this story. 7 times on 7. You know that story. You know the story because you know the song. 7 times, 7th day, trumpets of the ram, priests would blow the trumpets of the ram's horns, the walls just fell down. And scientists have discovered that the walls wasn't just bombarded, they fell down. They have proven that. Well, I'm glad, because we already knew that. Jericho and Ai, and then they took some others. They divided land among the 12 tribes. 2.5 tribes get dispersed a little different, but we won't go into that. And they set up judges to judge the people, to discern between like law matters, you might say, or spiritual matters also. Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Gideon, Fleece, and Abimelech, Tola, Jared, Jephthah, Ibzan, Elon, Samson, remember Samson, the big strong guy, Eli, and Samuel. And in the days of Samuel, they asked for a king. And he says, tell them you don't need to have a king, but you tell them this. God's going to give you a king, but here's what's going to happen when you get the king, and we'll see what happens. The children of Israel intermarry with the Canaanites in the land. Now, God has said specifically, do not intermarry. Because he has a plan, right, about how to redeem man through a specific bloodline. Now, are they trying to throw God curveballs? No. God doesn't. He knows what's going to take place. He has that luxury. We don't. But they think they can, and we think we can too. They worship false gods. They ask for a king, Judges 3. So they got a king, Saul, David, Solomon, those first three kings. And the kingdom splits, Rehoboam, Jeroboam, two different kingdoms. And they wanted a king to rule over them. We'll be like the other nations, if you remember. Then the kingdom divides. 10 tribes in the north, 2 tribes in the south. And here's the northern kingdom of Israel. They went into Assyrian captivity, wickedness. It's because of wickedness. God said over and over, I'll be your God if you'll be my people. They said, oh, yeah, sure, we'll do that. Mount Sinai, they've done it. They've done it all through their history. In the Assyrian captivity, around 722 BC, don't get too hung up on dates. God's not going to get, when you get to the pearly gates, God's going to say, can you quote the judges for me to get in? I don't think he's going to do that. He's going to interest what we know, what we've applied to our lives. Do we love him? Do we know him? They were carried in the first wave of prisoners to Jerusalem, to Babylon. They took another group in around 597. Of course, on and on into 586. This time they also destroyed the temple, the walls, which were later rebuilt. The entire country was just obliterated. Jerusalem was burnt. And you read the story. It's very graphic. Very graphic. People starving to death because they surrounded the city and besieged it. They left Judah alone when Israel split in half. When Israel left, Judah's alone. So that's the period, Judah's alone. A lot of stories here. The captivity of Babylon is going to last how long? For Babylonian, 70 years. Until the land had enjoyed the Sabbaths that it had missed. Because they had done wicked. They changed the priest. Who could be priest? What day you worship on? It didn't matter. Hamburgers and fries, the Lord's Supper, we might say. They were doing everything. They changed it all. Priest garments, Leviticus, we didn't go into that too much, but there's a lot they didn't do. Nebuchadnezzar, we know about him. During the first deportation, this is what happened. These Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Daniel's vision. He's over there with them. His vision was about 4 kingdoms, wasn't it? A statue, the Babylonians, Medo-Persians, the Greeks, and the Romans. All right, they returned from captivity. Ezra and Nehemiah are coming on the scene. One's priest. One's a cupbearer to the king. Ezra being the priest, Nehemiah being the cupbearer to the king. And Cyrus had made a decree to allow the people to go back. They had found in the writings, which is pretty astounding on Cyrus's part when you look at the history. He had found in the writings the things that had been done wrong. Because the big tumult had risen up. And said, these Israelites, they make trouble everywhere they go. If you go back, you'll find it. Well, he went back all right and found that that really wasn't the case. He allows them to return. Talked about Ezra and Nehemiah. The walls, they rebuilt the walls first. Some, we talk about why they rebuilt the temple. And I think there's some questions even in the scriptures about that. But in 52 days, they rebuilt those walls. Were they exact? Probably not. But they were elaborate, big walls. 52 days, which is a miracle in itself. They had a mind to work, the Bible talks about. Then they built the temple. But this temple wasn't like Solomon's temple that he built, was it? It wasn't near as grand. When you read about Solomon's temple and all the gold it had and the cedar and how they did that, It's just, I don't think we can even comprehend it. And the people wept, not because they had fear of something at that moment, because that temple looked nothing like the other one. But it was still a great looking temple. It still had gold and a lot of stuff, but not like the first one did. Well, they go back. Now, the poorest of people really weren't taken because they were no threat. I mean, you need somebody there to pay taxes, too. That's another thing that had going on, too. But that was what Egypt did a lot. Life pretty much in Egypt was around the Nile River. Outside of that, it get very scarce. Years of silence in between the two testaments, old and new, 400 years, somewhere in there. What happened in that era? A lot. We leave the Old Testament with the Jews just impoverished, poor, just no sect, no divisions among themselves. Although they were weakened. We open up with the New Testament, a whole different atmosphere, don't we? They're booming. Business is great. Jesus caught them selling and making money in the house of prayer, didn't he? So they're just doing great. And we have the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Essenes, and all the other Eens that came out of those dark ages. The Maccabean Revolt, Hasmonean Dynasty, all that, you can read it later, but it all happened in those years of silence. Sometimes we refer to them as the dark ages, but the years of silence. But God had said there's going to be a famine of my word, didn't he? There's going to be a famine of my word. But people didn't want to listen to that. They said, oh, please. Well, it happened, didn't it? And when Malachi closes, we don't see much about it. Because, see, God has no need at this point. The land had been fulfilled. That promise was fulfilled. He said, I'll make you a great nation. And through your seed, all nations will be blessed. He fulfilled the land promise. They were a great nation. And, of course, we're all blessed. We'll know that it's Christ, but we'll see how that lineage keeps going. It's around 435 BC. I talked about the Pharisees. And the power from Daniel's vision, the Babylonians, the Medo-Persians, the Greeks, the Romans. And in that area, we had a very short time the Babylonians had defeated the Assyrians. And just less than 100 years after that, they're defeated. Big empire. Hanging Gardens of Babylon. You have Alexander the Great after a little later. And all the things he did. Alexandria. And then you have the Romans. And then when we come into the New Testament, the life of Christ, God's silence is broken. John the Baptist is on the scene. And he's making a way before Christ. Jesus is born. We have the stories of Joseph and Mary. We have the story of the birth of Christ and what all that entails. And then here we see that his silence is broken, and it's broken at what John the Baptist, what John's name's going to be. His name is John. When the time had come for God to fulfill his promise. Now, did he ever get off track? It's about 1,500 or so years for the times of the Old Testament. So I wouldn't argue if someone said 17, but it's a long time. And we're in 2012. That's a lot of time. Now, Moses records the books of the first five books, kind of more shrunken, compact, nice, neat folder. But after that, it gets kind of overlapping, but it really, the same story. Maybe told different angle, different point of view. We have historians today that Josephus is one of them that recorded a lot of things that went on during the early church we'll talk about, and I'm going to bring it to a close. But it come time to fulfill his promise. What was that promise? Back in the Garden of Eden, thousands of years ago, man sinned in that garden. He ate of that fruit. He ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. If you ever ask yourself, what if he hadn't eaten that fruit? You had to have asked that question, because I've asked myself that question several times. Had it asked to me, what if he just hadn't eaten of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Where would we be? I don't know. If nothing ever happened, I guess we'd be in the Garden of Eden. Or would we multiply? I don't know. It really isn't important. I heard Wayne Moore years ago. He said people get caught up so much in foolish questions. He gave the example, and I'll never forget it. When Jesus told Peter, he said, before the cock crows, you'll deny me three times. He said, hey, who rooster was it? And knowing Wayne, it was hilarious. Whose rooster was it? Well, it doesn't make any difference. That's what's going to crow. It's going to crow. Before the cock crows three times, you're going to deny me. And he did. Or before the cock crows, you go down me three times. And he did. Cursed, even. John the Baptist. And then we have Jesus, his birth. And then we have the beginning of the early church. Acts 2, sometimes referred to as the hub of the Bible. The day of Pentecost, Acts chapter 2, and the whole book of Acts. And all that, early church. We'll read later in some of the letters where they go and set up elders and they have deacons. Everything that we have today, setting up the church. Just like they were with the Holy Spirit when he came and all that. He said, go and preach to every living creature. We have the early church. And then we have all these books. We have the Romans. We have letters written to Timothy. We have the Ephesian letters, the Philippians. All those letters were Paul, Peter, and all those people were writing letters, sometimes in prison, sometimes they're out preaching, sometimes they're out working. And this wasn't easy. Most of the time they didn't get paid. In fact, one time Peter says, look, I've not taken anything. I didn't take anything. Now, people get hung up a lot sometimes in that stuff. But the letters to the Christians were real. They wasn't real big books. They were letters. Some to build up, some to correct things. One particular time that two prophets, or two of the early apostles, you know, he said, I withstood him to his face. Things kind of got heated, didn't they? Was they wrong? No. Depends on how they handled themselves. But you can be angry about something and not sin. Jesus went out and drove out the money changers. And I don't think that was just an easy sigh. Y'all better get out of here. I don't think he did like that. And says he didn't. So we have letters to the Christians. In this we can see. I said a lot. I know. There's a lot I didn't say. We could be here for months and months. And even then we wouldn't get done. Because I don't know most of it. When I teach class, I rely on people. I'm teaching the class to help fill in the blanks because they do more for me than I do for them. But we see God's plan, though, unfolded through all these years. Redemption of mankind. And we'll see that bloodline. And when I started to put the names up there, Adam, Seth, Enos, and you go all the way down the line, into the divided kingdom. So-and-so married so-and-so, Ahab, and they cross over and they got the same names. It's kind of confusing, but if you just stay with it, you'll come back and you'll come to Jesus. We all related going back to Adam, we know that, and back to Noah. And the amazing part about it is when they're all doing all that fighting years ago, they're fighting their own brethren. Esau, the Edomites, the Amorites, every single person on the face of the earth. And back then, they were very close related. Barbaric, very barbaric. It was a very bloody time when the king divided in Israel, when they were right before they were taken into Assyrian captivity. Very, very bloody time. Don't know if there's ever been a time. We think times are bad. Old times are horrible today. We think times are bad today. I think it's probably worse then. We had a king, and he assassinates his king, Omri and Zimri. He assassinates this king, and oh, man. You know who your friends were. Oh, I got to let the king. Great. Boom. You're dead. You don't know if you want to be elected king or not that time. Now, God appointed, we had some good kings those days in other kingdoms, you know. But we see the unfolding of God's plan. We see it fulfilled to the very detail. Very specific. Even how Christ is going to come in. He's going to come in. He's going to be riding a donkey. He's going to come in at this time. And you can't know that stuff unless you're God. And also reassures your faith these things did happen. And it will give you that ability. When someone confronts us on the street and they say, well, I've got here to give an answer to the hope that is in you, as 1 Peter 3:15 says, you won't be caught off guard. Now, some folks are very good at the argument. They say I am. That's like the argument. No, I'm kidding. They don't say that really. But some folks just like to argue to win the point. They don't really care about truth. They want to win the argument, and they can really strip our legs sometimes. I've had my strike. Knew I was right, but I couldn't convey the point real well. But if we study enough, and we go deep enough, they don't go this deep. Most of them don't. Now, some of them do now. They'll hang right there with you. But a lot of them are about one, like an onion. You peel that one layer, it's exposed, isn't it? And they're like, Well, I really don't want to talk about it now. Oh, no, come on, let's talk about it. And somebody comes to your house, we'd like to talk about Scripture. Sure, I'd love to. I love when they come to my house. We have to have a good conversation, but I welcome when they come. Because you don't have to prove the story. They do. Their book. We have the Scriptures. There's no lies in it. You can't trip up with the Scriptures. God didn't make any mistakes in the Scriptures as we have it today. The Book of Mormon and other books full of mistakes, full of untruth, lies, and people will pay for those lies. The Bible says it will. We haven't talked a lot about salvation, I know. But when you know about God, now people say it can be, if you take it like trying to, you hear the old saying, trying to eat an elephant. Well, yeah, if you try to eat an elephant all at once, it's going to be difficult. If you eat it one bite at a time, and I'm not trying to play on Roll Tide or anything like that, but you got to take it one bite at a time. You got to sort of take little chunks. That's why I like to divide it up into 17 sections. You can divide it up into two if you want to, old and new. I just can't do it like that. I just ain't that, I'm not that bright. But if you divide it up in little sections, it's a lot easier to put your hands around it. And then when you know the link each time, like Joseph into Egypt, Exodus, what's the link there? And you keep going, it's like, it's wow. And before you know it, you've learned the Bible story and didn't even know you were learning the Bible story. It's amazing. That's how I learned it. Light just came up. Wow, I never knew that. I've been in class for a year and did not know that. Now I know that. And this is not too long ago. Because I did not study either like I should. We have to study to know God's word. If you never pick this book up, and all we hear is what's in the pulpit or in the classroom, food's being issued out, but you're not getting it in your mouth. We're not getting it in our bodies. What's going to happen if we don't eat? We're going to die. We're going to get weaker. And when someone stronger seemingly comes up to us, or another Christian or brother, or your brother wants to know something, you'll be weaker than that person. When we should be on meat, we're still on milk. But everybody's different. Study what you can. It may be that you are not a Christian. I would strongly urge you to do that if you need to do that. I wouldn't leave the building and go home. I wouldn't walk out the door. I'd come right now. Wouldn't you wait for a song? You don't have to. There's no script says, oh, gotta wait till them say the song's over. I would become a Christian tonight. I would. Study and live a faithful life. And if you've done that and you've strayed away, it happens. We see. And we're all human. We all make mistakes. We all should be asking each other to forgive our sins because we all have them. And maybe because we don't come on this front bench, it doesn't mean I'm not guilty of it. Because we are sometimes, aren't we? We are a lot of times. But we don't like to feel that way because we convict ourselves. And that's another reason why people don't like to study the story, because they convict themselves and they don't like to do that. We don't either. But if you have strayed away, I would urge you to come back, to be faithful to God. He needs you, because it's not getting easier for the gospel to be spread. It's worse. Sadly, we're like in the middle, trees everywhere, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. You may see it in Barbados. They're hungry for it. But people come back here like, oh, we don't want that. And it's so easy at our disposal. And I think part of that is because we do have it so much. Maybe a little tribulation. Sometimes that's what God knows what we need, and He'll give it to us too. If we can assist in any way, we'd urge you to do so as we stand and sing the song that's been selected.